This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thank you to all our speakers. I don't want to rehearse what people have said other than to say I think that's really quite a wonderful introduction and covers a range of issues from sort of your, Justice Michael Kirby's really 10 points that relate to law, Babak looking at intersectionality, Lee raising the issue of harm and minimising harm, Brenda looking at issues that face trans and gender diverse people, and Adam looking at mental health issues and how LGBTI people can be safe. What we're going to do now is we're going to open up for questions, and I need to give you some directions. If you want to ask a question, pull the mic on your table close to you, press the green button, press the button, and it should change from red to green. Give your question and then turn it off, because we're being taped, and if you leave it on, there'll just be multiple voices. So I hope that's clear. Would someone like to lead off?
I was really moved by some of the points that were made by Babak and by other speakers. What can we do for the refugee applicants to Australia who are on Manus and on Nauru and otherwise in Australia in impoverished conditions, unable to work? It really is a terrible indictment. The number is so small by international figures compared to the huge numbers that have flooded into Germany and been given sanctuary there. They can't really be stopped in Germany. They just come across land borders and they just keep coming. But with our group, it's such a small number that are coming, and one's sense of love and respect for other human beings is surely activated by us. It doesn't seem as though anything is going to happen unless it can be done on a bipartisan basis, and yet each of the political parties that leads into government usually have very hostile feelings and obviously feel that this is extremely popular politics in those electorates which lead to the change of government in Australia. They're the only electorates that matter in a federal election. The electorates on the outskirts of big cities, which may change to bring a change of government. And that's what's being targeted. And it really has not been an honourable or kind or spiritual response of our country. I despair of what can be done. The law has been enacted by successive governments. The first law requiring the imprisonment of people who arrive without visas was enacted by, I think, the Keating or Hawke government when Minister Hand was in office. So this isn't just a matter that's done by Mr. Dutton and the coalition. This has been something which has been a blight in our country over 25 years. And really, if anybody's got any bright ideas of what we can do to change the current political climate, I'd be very interested to hear it. And I think we should all be addressing that subject, because it's an affront to us as a member of the Human Rights Council of the United Nations. So I thank Babak for his statement. It was from the heart and it was sincere, and we must respond to it.
You need to press the button there.
Thank you. This one was a lie. And a voice. My name's Ian Gould, and I volunteer my time and make donations to GALFA, the Gay and Lesbian Foundation of Australia. So my question, I guess, is about one of the legacies, one of the positive legacies out of marriage equality should be the sustenance and increase in philanthropy within our community to support the very issues that have been raised today. So I'd like to challenge this room to think about in addition to donating time, which our community does a significant amount of, is now to also put our hand in our pocket and contribute funds to support the issues raised both within Australia and to address them internationally. I wonder whether the panel's got any comments of how we might challenge our community to donate far greater sums than we donated to marriage equality to address these more pervasive issues. Thank you.
It would be helpful to also have other than LGBTI people providing funds, I think, to support LGBTI. I would have thought, I think one of the big learnings for us through the marriage equality debate was the power of working with allies. And I think that we have a significant percentage of the community voting for marriage equality. As Justice Kirby said, we had a lot that didn't, but we had a lot that did. And I'm hopeful that going forward, we will be able to engage in a much more constructive way with philanthropic organisations to be involved in providing support and supporting programs within LGBTI communities. If some of that can come from within the community, that would be a bonus, I think. But I think also it would be helpful to have recognition of the journeys that most of us have been through, and the support for us to, I guess, grow from the base that we're on at the moment. So I agree with your point.
I'd also just like to add that I think there's a real concern and trouble with even philanthropic and grants that enter the LGBT community, especially where race is concerned and people of colour, and how they disappear or how they are championed by like groups who who aren't representative of the communities they wish to serve. And so I think often what happens is that white workers with wonderful intentions unfortunately are unable to serve the communities that they aim to because they have no understanding of lived experience. And so while I think it's very, philanthropic investments, financial kind of remuneration and support is all well and good, I think it's more important to interrogate what happens to funds that historically have come and aimed to serve vulnerable communities and whether or not those vulnerable communities, I say that in italics because that's the language of the sector, have ever been consulted, you know? And I think it's, we know the answer to that, and it's often no, and that's quite tragic.
I think it's also interesting to reflect on the fantastic support that LGBTI have had from our current government. I mean, we've had an unbelievable period of time of support, the appointment of our own commish, the appointment of an equality branch, the setting up of an equality branch within DPC, the investment that's gone into the community, the creation of funding for the Pride Centre. We've had an unprecedented element of support, it's, you know, we really have benefited from that and will for many years to come.
Anyone there or anyone around the table can help deal with, help solve one of the points that several people, including Michael Kirby and the panel.
Well, I had a similar question asked of me last night at the University of New South Wales, where there was a debate with Megan Davis, the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples, and all I could say was that if I look at my life and the period that Jamie has been struggling over so many years, and I've watched it from afar and sometimes close up, the plain fact of the matter is we have made progress. We have made progress. It hasn't only been progress from the Labor side of politics. For example, the Coalition's endorsement of the hepatitis C treatment was admirable. They could have postponed it or said we can't afford it or we're going to have consultations, but it was done. And similarly, other things have been done by both sides of politics. I think it's exhausting and it takes time. But look at the changes in my lifetime. Getting rid of White Australia, which was a core issue of the policy and law of this country. And it's not total, but boy, it's a big difference from when I grew up. Getting rid of a lot of the discriminatory laws against women. It's not total, but it's been greatly changed, and there is pressure, political pressure, on both sides of politics to deliver greater equality in opportunities and responsibilities. Similarly with disability, similarly with other groups and LGBTIQ. I mean, when I was growing up, it was illegal. And that battle took about 20 years. And during that battle, as I told the lawyers today, I was telephoned by Rodney Croom and Nick Turnan from Hobart and asked, should they take a complaint against Australia to the Human Rights Committee of the United Nations? I said, do not do it. I'll give you some money for your campaign. Keep working down there in the Apple Isle. Eventually you'll get there, but it is not timely. Iran is in the United Nations. They will totally oppose this. So will Afghanistan and all the other countries, and so will most of the Commonwealth countries. It is not timely. It won't succeed. It'll put the battle back. All of this was very rational. They said, oh, thank you so much, Justice Kirby. Thank you for your advice. And they went immediately and challenged it in Geneva. And they won. Teaching the lesson, you can be too cautious in this world, and that courage is important. And I'd mention Jamie Gardner here. You know, he has had real courage over a hell of a long time, and Brenda too, and other people standing up and doing things that everybody said, oh, it's hopeless, nothing's going to happen. Well, nothing's hopeless. And we've really got to have an agenda and a campaign. I would hope that next time there isn't a sort of demand of unanimity, because in the recent marriage equality postal survey, I was basically told, shut up complaining about the survey, because that is not helping the campaign to get marriage equality through. And I thought to myself, well, I better shut up because they're putting a lot of money and effort in this. So I shut up. But I'm not sure that I should have. You know, it was deeply offensive to me that in my country I was not being treated equally, and something that had only once before been tried in the First World War was being dragged out as an extra hurdle before I, as a citizen, could have my parliament deal with this issue. You don't have to get married. My partner, Jan, has put up with me for 49 years and 4 weeks. And we're not sure we will get married. I mean, why would you get married after 49 years and 4 weeks? It's getting late for the confetti. And we don't really want any more bric-a-brac and presents. But there's a bit of pressure that a lot of gay people are saying, oh, we've now got many. When are you going to get married? Can we come to the wedding? When's it going to happen? We want marriage and we want marriage now. Well, it's a matter of right and dignity that you can have it, but it's not forced on you. And I'm going home tonight in my economy seat in the back of the plane at the end of a long day, and Jan will be there and he'll have a bowl of soup and he'll say, what did you do today? And I'll say, I spoke about equality. And he'll say, oh, not that same old speech again. So, but we have made progress. We mustn't lose heart. We do rely on political friends. Political friends are not only on one side of politics. We've got to be ruthless and committed, and we've got to be courageous, and we've got to take risks. in the end, it will all be right. But believe me, Australia is a better country now than when I was growing up, when Brenda was growing up, when Jamie was growing up. It was really, if you think there are problems now, it was really horrible then. And we've all got to be in this together with a positive spirit, and we've got to find political allies on both sides of the aisle. They do exist, and they're not all gay, and they're not all with family of gay. Some people just can see that the way we've treated this minority and the Indigenous minority and racial minorities is just wrong, and it's got to change. It's counterproductive to our success. Look at us. We're in, by accident of history, because the Americans had their revolution, we are in a place in the world which is a tremendous opportunity for us. Are we really using that opportunity, or is the lingering racism in our history preventing us seizing the opportunity of being a safe and a democratic country in the South Seas, close to the great engine of the 21st century, the Asian mainland? And we've got to seize our opportunities, and we've got to be worthy of those opportunities. We've got to be leaders and be brave and strong. And I'm sorry, in my life I wasn't strong enough, and I should have dissented more than I did.
All right, shall we have time for one more question, if there is one? Okay.
But people do exist. Believe me, they do exist in the Australian community. I had a case in the High Court concerning refugees from Afghanistan. They were Hazara, from the minority community within Afghanistan, and they were in Adelaide, and good citizens of Adelaide said it is unacceptable to have children in detention camps. We will foster them, we will take them out, we'll send them to the local public school, we will put them in good homes, and we will give them kindness. And the children, whatever the mistakes or wrongs of their parents coming without visas, the children are utterly innocent. They should be looked after. And the Adelaide people came out in significant numbers to do that. Then it came to the courts. And the question was, did the Migration Act apply to children? It didn't specifically apply to children. And the argument was put to the family court, it doesn't apply to children because that is contrary to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, to lock up children immediately, and therefore federal parliament didn't really mean it to apply to children. And that won in the family court, and it won by majority in the full court of the family court, and then it came to the high court, and I thought when I got the case, this is a case that has the family court was right. But then the argument of the Commonwealth was, look at the Migration Act. The Migration Act contains express provisions for the searching of children in detention. And that was not consistent with the theory of the claimants, that the Act didn't apply to children, because if it didn't apply to children, why would the Act make specific provision for the searching of children? And secondly, the transcript of federal parliament, the Hansard, showed that the government had brought to the notice of the High Court that and to the notice of the parliament that this would probably be in breach of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And so the High Court eventually unanimously decided that the family court had to be reversed, and that meant that all those children who'd been looked after by foster care in Adelaide were sent back to the detention centre, and many of them then gave up the struggle, and that family were last seen going through the Khyber Pass from Peshawar into Afghanistan, and they've not been heard of since. So it's our parliament that needs to fix up the laws, and we can't expect judges to solve all the problems when the law is relevantly clear. And these are really sad cases, and we have not covered ourselves with glory in our treatment of refugees in Australia, and we've got to do better.
Yeah, I would also like to add and emphasise that refugees and asylum seekers, whether they be queer or trans, do not need saving. They do not need extra and extraordinary protections. They need the removal of prohibitions. They need to be decriminalised. And that happens at many layers of governance and society. And it begins at small gestures like boycotts and sanctions at broader levels.
I think we're over time, but I'd like to say thank you to Adam, Brenda Lee, Babak, and of course to Michael Kirby for sharing their thoughts and insights on what a post-marriage equality Australia not only might look like, but should look like. Can you thank all of our panellists for their contributions? Thank you.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.